Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I would love to present to you Dr. Eric Recker, who is a dentist, a speaker, an author, husband, father, and an elite success coach. He's also a pilot, a mountain climber, and he says he's a recovering triathlete, which I will have to ask him about. In the second half of his life, Dr. Recker is committed to helping people shorten the distance to becoming their best version and learning to win the now, which you can use as a hashtag, #WinTheNow, to find out more. So welcome, Dr. Recker.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to do the interview. So tell the audience about who you are and just a bit about your journey.
Yeah, so I'm a dentist by trade. I have one of those burnout stories that I think a lot of us have. It led me several years ago to almost selling my dental practice and walking away. When circumstances changed and that was not possible, I had to get really clear on what I wanted to do. And I believe that our journeys don't happen by accident. Our journeys happen so that we can help other people on their journeys. So through what I've gone through, my experiences with burnout, my goal is to help other people reduce chaos in their lives, help them to live present, and help them to figure out a life that they don't need to have a vacation from.
That sounds good. I'm sure many people want to learn how to do that from you. So tell me a little bit about, you were born somewhere, you have a family probably, so maybe give us a little bit of the personal.
Sure. So I was born in Pella, Iowa, southeast of Des Moines. If you've heard of Pella Windows, that's us. Mm-hmm. So I was born there, and I like to tell people that I spent 18 years trying to get away and then 7 years trying to get back. I thought I was more of a big city guy, that I was meant to be somewhere else than a town of 10,000 people. Didn't take me too long being in Iowa City for college and dental school that I decided that small town is where I wanted to be. I've been married to my wife for 27 years, and we have two sons, 22 and 19. And in this part of our lives, we love to travel. We have a place in Park City, Utah that we travel to a lot. We love hiking and skiing and all of those sorts of things. And if I had my way, I would spend at least an hour outside every day of my life.
Oh, yeah, me too. Probably more than one.
Yeah, at a minimum, 1 hour.
Yeah, yeah. So did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, so I grew up the oldest of three. Mm-hmm. So I have a younger brother and then a younger sister. And I'm fortunate. My sister still lives in my hometown. My parents still live in my hometown. It works out really well. I get to see them quite a bit.
That's great.
Yeah.
So can you share a couple of incidents from your childhood that you believe made you into the person you are today?
Yeah. Growing up in Iowa in the early 80s, recess kickball was life. Back when we got recess, that's what we did. We ran out to the playground and we played kickball. Well, when I was in second and third grade, I was not very athletic. I was kind of husky. I was a late developer. I was one of the youngest in my class. And I was told that I wasn't good enough to play kickball. So when they would pick teams, I was not picked. It wasn't that I wasn't picked last. I was not picked. So, and I was told that I wasn't good enough to play. You know, you hear that once, you might dismiss it, but when you hear it repeatedly, it starts to seep its way into part of your identity. Mm-hmm. So I tell people I was working on a broken operating system for a lot of my life, believing that I wasn't good enough. And I remember just recently, this memory's come back to me in about the last 3 years. I remember standing on the side of that recess kickball field saying that I was going to be so good at everything that I ever did that no one would ever not pick me.
Hmm.
those words that were spoken over me, you are not good enough, drove me to be good enough at everything I ever did, and actually caused me to become burned out at just about everything I ever did, and nearly sell my dental practice and walk away. So right. It's amazing, those words that are spoken over us when we're younger, they can really have a tremendous ripple effect.
They can. And if someone would have reached out to you and included you in the game, how hard would that have been, right? And could have changed the trajectory of your life, even. I remember having a similar experience to yours and feeling very demoralized by the whole situation. And this girl came up to me and said, you know, I've noticed that you're always on the outside and you don't get picked for any of the teams. And I'm just going to show you how to throw properly so you don't have that problem. And she said, would you like to learn that? And I'm telling you, that was a life-changing moment for a seven-year-old.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And we can all do that. If we think, I could be helpful here, what could I do? And she offered it nicely. She didn't ram it down my throat. She was just really nice about it. And I was so thrilled. I don't remember if I learned how to throw properly, but it was just so nice that somebody cared enough to offer this to me.
That's so cool. At the time you needed it the most, you were seen, known, and heard.
Yeah.
Somebody saw value in you and said, there's something that's not right. We got to get her in the game. That is so cool.
Yeah, it is. But you have then since made up for it because you've learned to value yourself for who you are rather than only for what you do.
Yes, but I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I felt I had to prove myself to those bullies that had moved on long before that. Those bullies don't care about me anymore. They didn't care about me a very short time after they said those words, but those words were running around in my mind. And so I tried everything. I kept adding things into my life. And I found myself at this spot where I had way too many things on my plate. I wasn't enjoying life. And I started having some serious health consequences from burnout.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into the burnout, because I definitely want to hear about that, what about when you were a young adult or an adolescent? Is there an experience that stands out? And it may not have been devastating like the one that you just told me, or it could be, but it might be something positive too. What stands out in your mind from those years?
I was at eighth grade party, kind of a celebration of the end of our eighth grade year. And there was a dance and there were some games and I was all ready to go. I had this puffy hair and I had khaki pants on and a pink shirt and a paisley tie. And I was excited. I was ready to have the night of my life. And I got turned down a total of 5 times by 5 different girls that I asked out that night.
No.
There was no shortage of confidence, but I will tell you, by the end of the night, I was pretty shy on confidence.
Oh, I feel for you.
And the funniest part was, by the time I got to girl number 5, she said, hey, you just asked my friend out like 5 minutes ago. And I knew it was probably time to stop for the night, cut my losses and move on.
This was asking them out or asking them to dance?
Well, first asking them to dance with the intention of asking them out, whatever asking them out meant in eighth grade, right?
Yeah. So did you get any dances in?
I got a couple dances, but that's as far as it went.
Well, yeah. So not 100% off the charts. You still got a couple of dances in.
Yeah. You know, when I look back on those things, mm-hmm. I learned that, yes, I was rejected. But, you know, doing what we do, we have to be okay with being rejected sometimes.
We do.
And if we're not comfortable with that, we're going to play life really, really safe. And if we play life really, really safe, we are going to miss out on some of the best opportunities of our lives. If I would have played life safe, there are so many things that have happened in my life that never would have been able to happen.
So what do you say you learned from these rejection experiences? How did you start to not play life safe?
Yeah, I knew I had to put myself out there. If I never put myself out there, nothing good was ever going to happen. I did not go to college to be a dentist. I went to college to be a physical therapist. And when I learned more about that profession, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. So I put myself out there and applied for school, knowing that there was a good chance I wasn't going to get in. And now in my profession of being, I'm still a dentist, but I put myself out there all the time with treatment plans for patients. I put myself out there all the time with proposals for coaching or speaking opportunities, and I get some yeses and I get some no's. And the first couple times I got the no's, it was pretty brutal. But as time marches on, I realize that it's all part of the journey, and a no isn't necessarily a never. It's just a not right now.
Yes, exactly. You know, all of my family are musicians. And so when one of my daughters was in a violin competition with a friend of hers who had never lost a violin competition, she was always first in everything. And my daughter was used to losing 50% loss, 50% first or second. And so she was just happy that anything would happen and that she got through the performance and she was fine with it. But the other girl developed quite a serious anxiety disorder over performing. And it started from the first time that she lost. When she didn't win first prize for the first time in her life, she was 15 and she'd been performing in competition since she was 6. And she couldn't handle it. She totally fell apart. And I think if you get a few rejections early on, you start to realize that you can survive. You can get through it. And possibly you noticed that too. You were able to get through things and move forward with some resilience that you might not have had had you just had it all easy from the beginning.
You are 100% correct. And from those lessons, we learned that we did not want our kids to live an easy life where they would never face any adversity.
Good.
We didn't want that at all. We always let them know that we were right there when they had adversity and we would help them walk through it, but we weren't going to fix it for them. And I think that has helped a ton for them because they face things in their lives as well. And I think if you never have any rejection, then you are just building up to this horrific experience of when you get your first rejection. And I think we're not doing our kids a service at all by protecting them from any risk of rejection.
I agree. It makes for very difficult employees to work with if they fall apart at the slightest little correction to something that they are not doing. Who wants to work with people like that? But it seems to be something parents don't think about ahead of time. But you obviously did. You thought, you know, I want my child to have some inner muscles.
We just always prayed that they would not do anything that would negatively affect their trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let them get in a little bit of trouble, let them get caught, just nothing where it really changes the trajectory of their life, if
right.
That makes sense.
Well, yeah, because you could do something that could give you a criminal record and then you're hooked. Getting out of that's pretty hard.
Yep. I got caught a couple times when I was growing up just doing some ornery, mischievous things that teenagers do. And my parents made me face the music and face the consequences and apologize and go through some of that stuff. And that was really transformative for me. I realized that, boy, there are consequences to life and I don't really want to go through that if I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good life lesson and one that you carried with you for sure. So you were born, we're all born into different groups. You're born into the state where you were, the race that you are, the country that you're in, into the language group. You might have a religious background. You might have other languages in your background as well. So of the things that you were born into, what still affects you and who you are today?
Yeah, I would say that faith has always been a really big part of my life. And I was born into that, but I didn't make it my own until I was in college. But it's bedrock for me and it's foundational in how I relate to people and how I live my everyday life.
What is your faith?
Christianity is my faith.
Yeah, but is there anything specific about it?
Oh, what's specifically about it? To me, it's just knowing that I'm not alone in anything, knowing that God is with me and walking along with me through everything that I do. When I feel like I'm in those dark places and I'm all alone, I'm really not. When I have rejection, I'm not alone. There is hope, and that steers me through life, through the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Having something that's bigger than you and that can help console is great. So Christianity and having a bedrock of faith has shaped you and continued to be with you. What other groups affected you? Often in small towns, there's a typical sport or there might be a musical instrument. There might be some hobby that was part of your family. And your family might have some specific characteristics as well.
Yeah. So family was always huge to me. There's a pretty good sized lake about 2 miles away from our house. And we would go out there on Sunday afternoons and we would build forts and we would make fires and walk along the lake and throw rocks in and be goofy with my family on Sunday afternoon. So kind of a practice of Sunday afternoons being a time of just exploration and joy and rest was always a huge thing. When I was doing triathlon, there was a triathlon club in my hometown, and that was just fantastic. 6 to 8 other guys that I could go work out with and we could share life with. And I'm very much a relational person. So we didn't just work out, we shared life, we shared what was going on with our families. And I really learned the importance of having 2 a.m. friends, having people that you can call on in the middle of the night if you need anything. I really haven't had a lot of those 2 a.m. moments, and they haven't happened at 2 a.m. But when I have had them, I've had people that I can reach out to, and I've had people reach out to me. I just think it's so dangerous to do this life alone in isolation.
Oh, COVID, I agree. Yeah.
COVID kind of told us that other people are toxic and we have to stay away. And I think a lot of people are still living on that operating system, some intentionally and some unintentionally, but we are better together.
We are. We're social animals. We're intended to share pheromones and inspire each other's knowledge through group consultations. It's not something that just happens and as an individual point somewhere in the universe to get lost.
Exactly.
So you have a profession, so there's the dentist culture. There's got to be other things that you experienced that became a part of your life. You might have learned another language. You might have traveled somewhere. Having children also affects a person's life and the sense of how they belong. What's happened since then that you joined and that's become part of who you are?
Yeah, one of the big parts, I joined a group called the Academy of General Dentistry, and that allowed me to get a fellowship advanced degree, and then after that, a mastership advanced degree. And I became very close with those people as well, as we did about 4 or 5 years worth of coursework together and would spend weekends together at continuing exercises and learning together. So that was very powerful, being able to travel abroad to do mission dental work, being able to travel to India on a mission trip, traveling to Africa to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, traveling to and Guatemala and Abaco in the Bahamas as a part of on the board of an organization called Many Hands. Being a part of something bigger has always been a huge part of life for me.
Yeah, it seems like you have sought out opportunities where you could go and make a difference with a group together to using the skills that you had, and then also climbing Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yes. That's a really cool story. We were able to do that. I think the only way that I was able to get my wife to allow me to do that is we ended up doing it as a fundraiser for a school in Tanzania. There were 7 of us who climbed, and we were able to raise $65,000 for this school. And in doing that, we were able to really transform the school. $65,000 in 2017 was a whole lot of money in Africa. So they were able to build 2 new classrooms, a new administrative room, and get some much needed technology for the school. To be able to do something that I really, really, really wanted to do, which was climb Mount Kilimanjaro and also be able to make the difference in people's lives, to me, that is absolutely the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And it gets to link all those different aspects of who you were growing up with who you are now as well.
Yes.
So did you adopt anything new in other than the things that you are already oriented towards? Did you adopt anything new into your sense of culture? I'll tell you, I adopted reverence from being associated with many people from the Middle East. So I have lots of friends from Iran, from Iraq, and they have a sense of reverence when they speak to people that they're very deferential, and it's honoring the other person, putting the other person first in your mind and really listening carefully to them. And part of that comes with a practice of when you come into a room, you personally greet everybody that's in the room. Of course, if there are 100 people, you don't, but you'd greet a few and then tell the others that you would like to greet them in person so that they know, and you ask them about their families and how they're doing and their health. This is not something I grew up with, but I have incorporated it into my cultural practice because I see it as being so much nicer than what I grew up with, which was just go into the room and sit down and not pay attention to all those other people that are there or just give them a little nod, you know? So is there something that you have incorporated into your own practice as a human being or as a professional from those experiences that you mentioned to me earlier?
I learned that if you want to be the most interesting person in the room, it's not the person who says the most or has the best stories. It's the person who's the best listener, exactly as you had just said. I am fascinated by people's stories. I'm fascinated by people's journeys. And a lot of times I get in a little bit of trouble in my dental practice because I listen to people's stories and I have hygienists that are waiting for me to come do checks for them. It's just really hard for me not to hear people's stories, and I want to hear how I can help.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's a huge thing that I have adopted.
Yeah, so you probably were oriented towards that, but you learned something from those stories, probably more empathy, more desire to listen, more curiosity. What do you think?
Absolutely. All of the above. And one thing that I have really learned, and this is not universal, but I do believe that most people are doing the best they can with what they have.
Yep. Yep.
I would not have believed that 10 years ago. I probably wouldn't have believed that 5 years ago. But the more I see it, the more I realize that human beings are complex. Their experiences are complex. Nobody knew what had gone on with me while I was growing up. Very few people knew my burnout story. Instead, I started sharing it to try to help other people. When you hear somebody's full story, oftentimes it gives you a real understanding of some of their mannerisms and maybe why they have some of their behaviors.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And taking the time to listen to it and them telling it in the way they want to is so important.
Absolutely.
So the question I usually ask now fits right into your burnout story, so maybe we could combine them. Oh, I would say that, you know, people are born with a temperament, and then the personality gets added on as they encounter different experiences, learn from them or don't, and join other groups and enlarge their experience. So people might say, oh yeah, Eric was like that when he was two and he's still like that. And there might be things that you would say people don't recognize in you now because you've grown and you've made some changes. So what would you say you were born with temperament-wise, and what did you add on personality-wise? And maybe you could add your burnout story into that piece too.
Yeah, so I was born as a kid who was just excited about everything. I was just excited about the world. I wanted to explore the world. I wanted to be in the moment and be present. But one of the things that I really picked up was anxiety. I think a lot of that anxiety had to do with the fact that I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to face the bullies. I didn't want to be not good enough. I didn't want to deal with a lot of those things. And so I developed a fear of Mondays. And I would start to notice it already, sometimes even Saturday night. I would just start getting that. A lot of people call it the Sunday scaries when the reality of Monday comes along. It was kind of a perfect storm for burnout. My dad fortunately bought, and he's a dentist, or he was a dentist, and he bought another dental practice when I graduated from dental school and merged his practice with this new practice so that I would have a full slate of patients to start. That was amazing and such a gift that he gave me. But it also was a little bit of a curse in the sense that from day one, I had patients scheduled out 6 weeks. So I really didn't have any kind of onboarding when I started practicing dentistry. But I just believed that that's how it was supposed to be. And I didn't learn some of the things I know now about how you can't just neglect yourself, expect everything to be okay. You do have to take care of yourself. So I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. The answer was always more. I added more things. And I got to a point in my journey where I was buying the practice from my father. I was building a new clinic. I was getting ready to go seven figures into debt. I was training for two Ironman triathlons, serving on five boards, and coaching both of my kids in soccer.
Makes me feel anxious just listening to you.
Exactly. And the thing about it is, if you understand the story of the frog in boiling water, how you put a frog in a kettle and turn the heat on, it doesn't realize that the temperature is going up until it's boiling and it's dead. That's kind of what it was like for me. I kept adding something, and somebody asked me to serve on a board and I said, sure. And somebody asked me to do this and I said, sure. And I didn't want to miss out on coaching my kids for soccer. And I had to keep competing because I had to prove to people that I was good enough. And then all of a sudden I had all of these things and no time to take care of myself. So it wasn't uncommon for me to sleep 4 hours a night in this season.
So how did you get out of this? What happened?
Yeah. So this went on for a long time, more than 10 years, to be quite honest. And so what would happen is I gave up triathlon, and then things seemed to get a little bit better in that I didn't have some of the big time symptoms of burnout. I wasn't having panic attacks yet at that point, but I was having chest pain, heart palpitations, tension headaches, lots of stuff like that, poor sleep, lots of things, spinning mind. So what would happen is when I got done with triathlon, I had a little bit more bandwidth. And so things got a little bit better and I would just kind of suppress it and then keep going for a while. Well, then it would start showing up again and then I'd have a really bad season and then I would suppress it again and it would come back. And then I started having panic attacks around 2019. I think I started having my first panic attacks. And then I had been absent with my family because my business was growing so much and I was so busy with that. but I was not enjoying what I was doing even a little bit, but I wasn't talking to anybody about it. I kept it all inside. And I think that's where the panic attacks started coming from. Then we had COVID, and COVID was actually a time where I stepped back a little bit and thought about what I really wanted my life to look like. But then we came back from COVID and dentistry was declared a hazardous profession. So we had all new kinds of PPE requirements and different things that we had to do. So it was incredibly cumbersome. And shortly after we came back, that's when I decided I was going to sell my practice and walk away from dentistry. That was late 2020. We had a plan in place with one of the dentists that worked for me. He was going to buy it about mid 2021. And then January of 2021, it was a Monday morning of all times, and he did not show up for our morning meeting. We called his wife. She said he left for work at the same time. Called his phone. He didn't answer. Next thing we heard was sirens, and he was in a horrific car accident about less than a mile away from our clinic.
Oh, that's terrible.
It is very terrible. He survived, and he's alive. But it was quickly apparent to me that all I was doing was trying to run away from my burnout, and this was not the right answer.
Mm. Yep.
So I stepped back and looked at what I really wanted out of life, and I ended up finding a partner in my practice. He bought 50% of the practice, and part of the agreement with that is that I would start seeing patients 3 days a week so that I could help people on their burnout journeys. And so that's what I do now. I've been doing that since early 2021. So I see patients Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then I do coaching and speaking and writing books on the other days.
Hmm. You feel better about that?
I do. I do. This is a much better balance than what I had in the past. Mm-hmm. If I would have walked away from dentistry, I just would have been trying to escape my burnout. And it would have been probably the biggest mistake I could have made.
Right. Because really, your whole life is tied up in dentistry and you're a very successful dentist. So it would have been too big an abrupt change for your nervous system to tolerate. It would have
I can only imagine what my wife would have had to put up with if I would have gone through with that.
Well, yeah, it could have sent you into a spiraling depression, a heart attack, all sorts of things could have happened to make such an abrupt change.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how has this changed you personality-wise, would you say?
I'm a lot more grateful.
Ah.
I am so much more grateful. I realize that every day is a gift. I realize the beauty of relationships. I realize the privilege of getting invited into someone else's story and helping them come up with a plan to move forward. I realize that a lot of people are walking around with a lot of despair. They don't have a lot of hope. They have a lot of chaos in their lives, and they just don't know what to do about it. And when I get a chance to step into that and help them figure out how to quiet the chaos and move forward with hope, there isn't much of a better gift than that.
I agree. Have you read the book Burnout by the Nagoski sisters?
I have not read that one.
That really changed a lot of the way I see a burnout, because the idea behind it is that most people think that resilience means how much abuse can you take, when in fact, resilience is building up self-care, service, and things that allow you to be a social human being so that you can be healthy and make better decisions, not how much abuse you can take. And when you were telling me your story, I was thinking about this idea that, you know, I can take it, I can take it is not resilience. That's just how many times can you be punched in the face before you don't have a face left? But you came out of that with some self-realization coming from the accident of your friend. That could have happened to you. That could have been you in that accident too. And because a lot of people, when they go into these burnout, I can take it mentalities, they don't even realize how close they are to falling down the stairs or getting into a car accident, just because they have nothing left in their reservoir. They haven't built up their resilience reservoir. They've just got, you know, a little tiny piece in the bottom of their resilience reservoir. Once they burn it up, it's gone. And then they try again to feel a little bit better and keep burning it up. So how do you teach people? The reason I'm giving you this long thing is, how do you personally teach people or help people to build up their resilience reservoir so they don't keep going through the pattern of burnout?
Yeah, the first thing we do is just step back and we figure out what people really want out of life.
Good
and
one.
That answer is different for everybody, because if we don't know what we want out of life, then things like specials on Amazon and social media and all of those things are going to seem really attractive, because we aren't interested in doing the deep work of figuring out what we really want out of life. And then so we zone out. buy a bunch of crap that we don't need, get into a lot of debt, and then we feel like we can't change what we're doing.
Right.
But if we really get crystal clear on what we want, there is an ability to make a plan to be able to move towards that. And once you start doing that, once you start figuring out the sweet spot of your why and your purpose, and I know that can be kind of a woo-woo word for some people.
No, it's necessary.
I think it's completely necessary. When I figured out that my overarching why was to make a difference in the world that is utterly disproportionate to who I am, then I was able to step back and say, okay, is this behavior supporting that why? Is this action supporting that why?
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, it just made such a big difference. So really, once we do that, then we can go to work on starting to build a life around the habits that support the why. And when we do that, that's where we start filling that reservoir, because we get better at saying no to things that don't support the why. Because we say so many yeses, and when we say all these yeses, we're saying no to something. And typically, we're saying no to our family and no to the things that are most important to us.
Yeah. And also those yeses mushroom. They're never one thing. They just kind of grow on their own, get too big.
That's a great point.
So yeah, if we have to think, I've been trying to train myself for that. If I'm saying yes to something, then how many things do I have to say no to? Because that one yes is going to grow. It won't just be one thing.
Yes. And we have to boundary our time.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. And I have to say no to some people who say, hey, I want to buy you a coffee and pick your brain. So in Iowa, that's a 2-hour meeting at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to love myself and respect myself enough to say, I would love to do that. Here's a link to my calendar. Let's grab a 30-minute virtual coffee and see where we go from there.
Yeah, I've had to do that too.
The beautiful thing about that is that I don't have to avoid an awkward goodbye,
mm-hmm.
because people know the appointment is from this time to this time.
Right.
And also what it really does is it weeds out the people who aren't really interested in doing work. They just want to grab some free information from you.
Yeah, and move on and do the same thing they were doing before.
That's exactly right. I feel like if people do it that way, it means they're much more interested in actual life change.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. So was there a time when you felt, I'm sure it's happened several times, that you felt like your understanding of the world was suddenly revealed to you as being yours or your culture's understanding and not just what everybody else did?
I would say when I go back to that day when the car accident happened, mm-hmm. and it was a Monday morning, and we had a full slate of patients, and because he wasn't going to be there, I was the only dentist there. And what happened was amazing. A really good friend and longtime mentor and confidant happened to be my first patient that morning, which was just amazing.
Mm.
I needed that.
Yeah.
And my other associate dentist, who usually works Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, she showed up within 20 minutes after it happened, didn't ask any questions, and just says, I'm here as long as I need to be here. What
wow.
I learned is these relationships, these other humans that we get to do life with are just unbelievable people.
Yeah,
they really are. And we have to take those very seriously and be very grateful for the people who are willing to step into our lives in the tough parts. And I just don't think our society doesn't see relationships as important and as valuable as they are.
Yeah. And those people had to say no to something else so that they could respond to your emergency. And it's kind of like the balancing point to what you just said. You set boundaries around your life and the way you spend your time. But also when a relationship is at stake, you say yes to that.
Absolutely. When I've been on the board for many hands, one of the things that they keep asking and that I heard very early on is to look at a situation and in that situation say, what does love require of me in this situation?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I love that question. And I hate that question, because sometimes that you're going to have to make a sacrifice to do what love requires. But sometimes when you ask what love requires, it doesn't necessarily have to be a no to a family member. Sometimes you can draw your family in to help with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And help everybody learn valuable lessons. So it's just interesting. What does love require of me in this situation? It's such a great question.
It's a wonderful question. I'm going to keep using it. And it reminds me of a quote that I heard a couple of years ago, which is, where there is love, nothing is too much trouble, and there is always time.
Oh.
Good, eh?
That's a really good one.
Let's put those two together. What does love require of me? And where there is love, nothing is too much trouble, and there's always time. Nice, good way to live our lives, isn't it?
It's a good way to live our lives. I love that.
Well, we're reaching the end of the interview right now. What would you like to promote? What would you like listeners to leave with? Here's your soapbox moment.
Okay. Well, I want people to leave with hope. There can be a different way than the way life has been going. And sometimes it's not as hard as you think it is, but it's not going to happen accidentally. I have some resources available to help if you're not feeling confident with how you're taking care of yourself. If you want some other ideas of some small things you can do, I have a resource on my website called Refueling Hacks. It's 150 different ways that you can take care of yourself, and that's something that you can grab. I also have a 7-day knockback burnout challenge. If you feel like you're feeling overwhelmed, maybe not full on burnout, but you get too much on your plate, it's a great resource to check out. It's also available there. I am in the business of relationships, and whether it's coming to speak to your group about how to take better care of yourself and how to lead yourself better and reduce the chaos in your life, or whether it's one-on-one coaching, I'd love to have a conversation and see if I can help on your journey.
That's a lovely thought to leave people with. This in your website, is it ericrecker.com?
That is it.
Okay. So for people who are listening and don't have time to jot it down or put it into my phone, it's ericrecker.com, ericrecker.com. And I'm looking forward to exploring that and checking out your resources. This is a wonderful tool to have to offer to our listeners. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
It has been great. Thank you so much for having me. I hope the listeners can step away with a little bit of hope and maybe a little lightness in their step the rest of the day.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure we all will. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Throughout his life, Eric Record turned incidents of rejection into a fury of efforts to prove he could do anything. Although it earned him several prestigious dentistry degrees, the title of triathlon athlete, and took him to other countries to help the less fortunate, he suffered from extreme burnout. The turning point came when his colleague was in a serious car accident and his professional connections jumped in to help. At that moment, Dr. Recker realized relationships matter most, and no goal or ideal is worth sacrificing your family, friends, and health. He now balances part-time dentistry with speaking, writing, and coaching to help people suffering from burnout to find their why and reset by focusing on their purpose in life. My takeaways from this conversation are, 1, words children hear stick in their memory forever. We need to teach each other, adults and children alike, to speak kindly. 2, professional parents who help their children get started professionally provide a precious gift, but one that comes with unexpected challenges. 3, no matter what accolades you have on your resume, nothing matters more than the empathy and listening you show to others and your relationships with them. I really enjoyed my interview with Dr. Eric Recker, and if you know someone who could benefit from hearing his story about overcoming burnout, please do send the link to that friend. It could be a turning point in their lives. Thank you so much for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Listeners can now interact with Culture and Leadership Connections podcast by leaving a voice or text message on Fan List. It is a fun and quick way to let me know what you liked, ask a question, or leave a suggestion. I will feature some of the voice messages on upcoming episodes. You might be surprised to hear your own voice, but only if you leave a message, of course. So to leave your personal message or your question, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the Fan List link to leave it. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say.